Today on Movie Wallahs, we talk about Bridge of Spies and Steve Jobs. It's time for Movie Wallahs. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings all.
Hello.
Hello. Happy Sunday.
Yes. We are recording from Shea Yazdi again today.
Always with good food.
And the place is hot. Filled with...
aroma.
Pie. What are those things?
Trader Joe's... mini pies.
They look delicious. And you went and warmed them. Do they? They don't need to be warmed.
They need to be warmed, yes.
Yeah. Oh,
they
do need to be warmed. It's like Yazdi baked.
I baked for you guys and all our listeners.
Yes.
The things I do on a Sunday when I could
so
be hiking.
It's not so good in your house.
Because of the pies. But they're good. They're little itty bitty. They're
so
small.
You did baking instead of hiking.
Yes.
It was a conscious choice, Yazdi. Yes. Don't make out like...
Look, all you need to do is an ing on a weekend, and that's good.
Yes. Like hip-hopping.
Correct.
Or sleeping.
Or shopping.
Or eating.
Correct. Or all my favorite things.
Recording.
Or podcasting.
Yeah. Yay.
We go off on tangents as we do. So we have a couple of movies I wanted to... I'm kind of excited to talk about today. Steve Jobs, obviously, one of them. Bridge of Spies. But before we go there, we... I'm still trying this regular slot on the podcast, which is I can't find anything on Netflix, which is a segment that we thought we would introduce to the podcast simply to tell you what wonderful things are in our Netflix list, or if you're a Netflix subscriber not being able to find anything that you want to watch, just a couple of picks. So, Rashmi, why don't you give us your pick of the week?
So my
Netflix.
Pick of the week, and I noticed that I was giving mainly documentary, so I figured I'd find a feature. And one of my favorite movies of recent time, actually from 2011, is a movie called Bernie that stars Jack Black and Shirley MacLaine and Matthew McConaughey. And basically the premise is a rich old lady and a friendly mortician become friends. And Bernie, it's actually based on a true story. And I think this was one of Jack Black's finest performances.
I remember when the movie was released, it was released right around this time, around November.
Yeah.
And it kind of got lost in the shuffle with all the other bigger movies, which were, contending for the big awards, which is a shame. It's actually Richard Linklater directed it before he came out with Boyhood. And it's one of his...
It's brilliant.
It's a great movie.
I had a hard time with that one. I'm going to be a little bit of a naysayer. It's not necessarily a Joe movie, but you know what? I was perhaps not in the best mindset when we watched it. It was something we watched pretty late in the evening.
Yeah. I just like it. It's a real dark black comedy. Very interesting, with a really, really dark edge. Quite a sinister edge.
Yeah.
Total Rashmi movie. Loved it. Bernie. That's my recommendation for this week.
Yazdi.
So my recommendation, remember, I've promised to recommend foreign films. And my recommendation for this week is a movie called Like Father, Like Son. And it's directed by Korida-san, who I think is probably one of the finest Japanese directors working right now. I'm a huge fan of one of his other movies, which I will bring up some other time. But this particular movie, let me just tell you the premise. The premise of the movie is that two families get a call from the hospital saying that their three-year-old sons could have possibly been switched at birth. And, you know, that's the premise of the movie. And you could make a soap opera out of it. You could make a moralistic fable about it. You could get heavy-handed and make... you know, a courtroom drama out of it. But this movie is none of those things. It just watches those two families deal with that information. What do you do? I mean, even though, of course, on the face of it, you say the child you've reared is your own child, you know, bloodline be damned. But at the same time, how do you deal with a kid who looks exactly like you, who is growing up with some other family? And to the movie's great credit and to this director's extreme credit, it would have been so easy to make one set of parents be the bad guys and the other ones be the good guys. And both sets of parents, one family is very rich. They live in a picture-perfect home. The other family is like hand-to-mouth existence.
Oh, so it's like kind of like the prince and the pauper. You're born makes a difference.
And each family judges the other, but the movie always makes it clear that both of the families at no point have any doubt about their love for their kids. And it's just a beautiful observational movie.
That looks good.
Like Father, Like Son. Brilliant film.
I'll have to add that to our queue straight away.
Okay, one of the reasons I like this segment is because Yasti in particular comes up with some really offbeat picks, yes, that we wouldn't ever have heard of. So thank you.
Okay, it has been added to our list.
Cool.
And my pick of the week is a movie that we actually reviewed way back in the day on Movie Wallet. It's a movie called Melancholia from director Lars von Trier, who has most recently, I think he did Nymphomaniac, which we reviewed at least part one on the show. But he's also done movies such as Antichrist and other kind of
Breaking the Waves,
crazy stuff. And yes. Melancholia, I think, is in some ways his most accessible movie that I can think of. It's only one that I liked very much. It stars Kirsten Dunst, and the basic premise is Kirsten Dunst and Alexander Skarsgård actually in this one celebrate their marriage at their sister's home, while at the same time a planet called Melancholia is heading directly towards Earth. This movie does have a somewhat slow first half, so if you watch this, just urge you to give it a little patience, because the second half is just spectacular. So Melancholia,
one of the better depictions of depression on film, I think.
Yes.
Just, I love this film. We all do. We all love this movie so much.
I think this was
one
of our earlier podcasts, actually.
Yeah, it was way back in the day.
Yeah.
And again, not to be a spoiler or anything, but easily one of the best closing shots in any movie history, in the history of cinema.
Yes.
Yeah. One of the best closing scenes.
And again, just that whole moral question of, if you knew today's your last day, what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, looking back at my notes actually on this, we reviewed that in November of 2011.
Wow.
So, yeah, almost 4 years ago.
Wow.
Okay, let's... So, the three movies of the week are...
Bridge of Spies.
No, three Netflix recommendations.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were asking.
Pay attention, Rashmi.
Sorry. Bernie.
Like Father, Like Son.
And Melancholia. Cool.
And now, Bridge of Spies.
Yes, why don't we bridge over to Bridge of Spies?
So, Bridge of Spies is the latest film from director Steven Spielberg, who literally does not need any introduction. The film is set in the late 50s during the height of the Cold War. And the story is based on, or rather inspired by true events, and concerns an insurance lawyer who is recruited to represent a Russian man who has just been arrested as a spy and is going to go through a trial. And as this lawyer gets pulled further and further into a moral abyss, he eventually is actually recruited by the CIA to try and negotiate an exchange of spies between the two countries. And that's sort of the premise of the movie. It has a really amazing cast, which includes Tom Hanks in the lead character. It also has Alan Alda. It has Mark Rylance. It has Amy Ryan playing the wife of Tom Hanks. And the movie is written by Matt Sharman and Ethel and Joel Coen of the Coen Brothers fame. They wrote it. So Spielberg movie is always a big event in moviedom. So what do you guys think about it?
So this is such a proficiently and professionally made movie by an evidently seasoned director who has nothing to prove. It's so elegantly constructed with such a beautiful rhythm and pace. And I think what I love the most is that the issues that we see that are happening in 1957 are the same as what we're facing today, which I guess is equally as depressing as well. I really, really like this movie.
Yeah, it's a very effective, masterfully crafted movie. Just a little light in tone. And I think I credit that lightness to the Joel and Ethan Coen kind of sense of absurdity that sometimes runs through their movies. I think they didn't necessarily, and Spielberg certainly didn't bring that out in the script here, but my only real niggle, and it's a nitpick really, from, you know, just to say, you know, explain why I'm not gushing over this, is that it was just a little too light given the gravity of some of the situations depicted.
Yeah, I did not want to see this movie, if you guys remember. I mean, I'm really tired of this whole Cold War thing. What more needs to be said, you know, after all the John le Carré novels, and there have been so many movies about, you know, Russian and U.S. spies. And so I really, you know, very reluctantly went to see this movie. And I think, like you, Rashmi, my sense while I was watching the movie was like taking a ride in a Mercedes. It's just so well made. It's just so
fit and
burnished. It's burnished.
Top
it's
notch.
So beautiful. And it's not showy. You know, there's a difference between being showy and just being polished. And this is just very, very polished. Yeah. And the shots are beautifully crafted. And, you know, you know right from the first few minutes that you are in somebody who knows how to make movies. And you said it beautifully. It's about a man who doesn't have anything left to prove. And, you know, Spielberg doesn't have to prove anymore. And I think of this movie actually as the anti-Spielberg movie because, you know, Spielberg is a filmmaker of big things. I mean, his filmography has always been about big melodrama, big things, special effects, Raiders of the Lost Ark, big emotions, big themes. Even Schindler's List is all about, you know, only about the whole Holocaust and kindness and so forth. And I think here, maybe due to the influence of the Coen brothers, this is a movie which is almost deliberately about small things. So it kind of burns.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, it kind of burns on an even keel through the whole thing, but it's no less riveting the entire time. And I think the kind of questions it asks are, like you said, Rashmi, they're so relevant right now. And it just got me thinking about so many things while I was watching it. And, you know, not to give anything away, but the way it is crafted, there is no false moves. There is no, things are not blown up out of proportion just to create tension. It just plays out with confidence.
Yeah.
So I liked it a lot.
The first scene, it's so elaborate and it's so well constructed that it totally transports you to that time and place. And I think what it made me remember is that when film is done well, it's like time travel. You are completely transported to that time and that place. And you get to spend 3 hours, 2 hours in that universe. And what was stunning to me is that I was watching my watch in some ways, not as a bad thing, but there's almost that first scene is probably about 15 to 17 minutes long and there's no dialogue. Mm-hmm. It's all just
it's just
action.
Watching.
It's just watching what's happening
and
watching a character develop. And it just comes to life. And I agree with you, Joe. The one thing I made in my notes is it's got the appropriate level of humor for me.
Right. I just felt that it was lacking in tension.
Like,
and I think you made the point yesterday earlier that, you know, it's got an appropriate level of tension. For me, I was looking for a little bit more danger. And, you know, I always, for some reason, the movie The Debt springs to mind when I think about this type of era
spies
being in real danger. And given that there's a lot of crossing over into territories where you're on your own, right? As a human being, you are moving into a situation where effectively, you know, your government cannot help you. You are going behind enemy lines. I just wished it had been a little bit more uneasy. And that's just a minor niggle because I think it's part of the deliberateness of tone here.
There was a movie which came out earlier this year called 71. Remember?
Yes, the Irish soldier
which
movie.
Also dealt with somebody being thrust into enemy lines and having to survive and knowing nobody's going to come and save you. And
yes.
That movie generated that
it
a lot more.
Genuinely frightening.
Yeah.
But I think, again, it's not that. I think it's deliberate. I think he really wanted to avoid melodrama. He just wants to tell this story.
I accept that.
And it's a great story.
Yeah. I mean, I think, sorry, Joe, were you going to say something else? I was just going to say, and I know this is going to sound a little bit jingoistic, I think. What I really loved about this movie is its attempt to take a position about war and what I think it means to be American and the difference between being American and not being American. And I say that with respect to the dialogue and the position it takes on torture techniques and prisoners of war and potentially treating people who are here to hurt us, right? But it's very understated and refrained. And it doesn't shout at you like other movies that we've cited in the past.
Well, it lets you make your own conclusion.
Kind of slap you in the face with it. But this was just, I guess the word elegant kept coming to my mind.
And very few movies really deal with this situation, which is, you know, that when things are bad, you know, when it's war or when something really bad has happened, we as human beings, our first impulse is to forget our humanity and to get bloodthirsty. And the movie Prisoners kind of dealt with this, you know, when something bad has happened and you find somebody who could be very easily responsible for it, you lose your sense of humanity. You want bad things to happen to that person.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's a lot of this which happened in the Cold War, which is that when you capture a spy, would people forget that you should treat that spy like how you would have wanted to be treated if you were a spy in Russia? And people completely forget about that. And this movie's kind of holding up its hand and saying, wait a minute, you know, how dare we lose our humanity? How dare we are better than them, and we need to treat those we have captured better than how they might treat us. And again, it's not shouting it out. It just, there's a very short scene about the American spy being caught in Russia and how the court treats him. And it happens at different points in the movie too, but it's clearly making the case that
absolutely,
can we be better than this? And that it's able to do this without preaching or without, you know, shaking a finger at you is quite marvelous. This is a long movie. It's like, what, at least 2 hours and 20 minutes, if not longer.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's like that ride in the Mercedes. It's so smooth. It's so beautifully. I mean, at some point I started enjoying the movie more for how the plot was unfolding as much as how it was unfolding, the visualness of it. And there's so many scenes in New York subways, and there's so many scenes in German airports, and it's beautifully, painstakingly recreated. And it's not just recreated, it's how it's filmed, the camera angles and how, you know, things swoop down. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, cool right now to hate on Spielberg and call him, you know, a master showman. Yeah, you know, somebody who overdoes things. But, you know, watch this movie.
Yeah. So anything else to say on this one, or should we go for summing up?
Ready to sum up.
Joe.
So, yeah, a very, very enjoyable spy thriller. I'm going to struggle with the score on this one because I think an 8 doesn't quite do it justice. But for me personally, I would like something just a little heavier. So I'm going to stick with an 8, but bear in mind that is an extraordinarily stingy 8 because this movie is something else. It's very special.
Yes, Lee.
I'm angry with how this movie has been marketed because it should have gotten to me and it did not get to me. I went to this movie almost kicking and screaming, and nobody should have to go to this movie kicking and screaming. I wish they had marketed it. You know, the poster is of the face of Tom Hanks against, you know, the Russian flag. It makes it seem like one of those
dull
Frederick Forsyth, Robert Ludlum, you know,
Tinker Taylor,
one of those other you know, nicely made, handsomely made spy thrillers. But it's not. This movie has a lot to say about what's happening right now, even as politically we are dealing with immigration and we are dealing with refugees around the world. All of those topics become relevant to this movie. It's a fine, fine piece of filmmaking. You know, to Spielberg's credit, he doesn't need to prove anything to anyone anymore, but I think there will be a time when he will die and when people will write up an anthology for him. I think this movie is going to be amongst his best films. I think this movie is really going to grow to greater respect with age. And, you know, it belongs right up there with E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind and Schindler's List. I think as much as an un-Spielberg-like movie as it is, it's one of his best. 8.5 out of 10. I struggle with giving it a 9.2, but I'm going to back down to 8, knowing it's horribly stingy. But please, this might be one of the better films of the year. People, please go out and go seek it out.
I'm going to give it an 8.2. I agree with you guys. I think the genius of this movie is the premise is the guy that we see right out at the front, a spy or not. And you know what? It doesn't even matter. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the genius of this movie. This isn't anything new, but it's really well crafted, well acted, and a really well spoken movie. This had some of the best dialogue in terms of how people really speak that really struck me. Yeah, I struggle to give it a 9, but I think an 8 is really well deserved.
I think there will be some recognition during awards season, and I think this may give this movie a second wind because, like you, Yazdi, I mean, there's very little that inspires one to watch this at all. I mean, even the press material, the trailers, the TV spots, it's been marketed somewhat well. I mean, we've all heard of it, but it's
not the movie you think it is.
Yep.
Correct.
Yeah.
Great movie.
And, you know, you're hoping that this is a movie to remember for Steven Spielberg. I certainly hope his next movie, which is Ready Player One, is going to be one of the classics, because that's a book that Rashmi and I have read and had a fabulous time with. It's a bit of a geek book, but... and actually, I didn't think Rashmi was going to like it at all.
I loved it. I ripped through it.
But it's that's his next movie, and I think that's going to be an interesting visual sci-fi. It moves Spielberg back to the kind of visionary stuff. I think there's lots of ways for that movie to go wrong, but I feel like it's in capable hands.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of geek and nerds, movie number two of the week is Steve Jobs. And very briefly, this movie is based on the Walter Isaacson biography of Steve Jobs that came out shortly after Steve Jobs' passing. I think it was 2011. It's already been 4 years. The movie has been in somewhat of a production hell. They've gone through various directors. I think David Fincher was on board at one point. He dropped out. And then the lead actor has been somewhat problematic. But we ended up with Michael Fassbender, who isn't really a Steve Jobs lookalike, but an interesting casting choice. We have Seth Rogen as Steve Wozniak, Kate Winslet as Joanna Hoffman, and Jeff Daniels as John Scully. There are many, many other names in this movie, too many to list. It's based on Aaron Sorkin's take on the Steve Jobs biography, and rather than trying to attempt to portray the standard biopic from A through Z, Aaron Sorkin has taken three selected moments from the life of Steve Jobs to try and tell us about who he was. Danny Boyle is at the helm, so one of our favorite directors, I think, here on Movie Wireless. So, guys, what did you think of Steve Jobs?
I like this movie. I think the movie should be up for awards consideration, particularly in the acting categories, and we can talk about it later. And I like that Aaron Sorkin... I'm getting bored. I'm sorry, I'm getting bored of a lot of things, but I'm getting bored of the typical biopic. They were born in a field somewhere and then they grew up and bad things happened. And then when they were 18, this happened. You know, it's make a television series. You know, it's too much to push down somebody's throat. And I really like that Aaron Sorkin, you know, that great master of, you know, of dialogue, you know, has chosen to tackle Steve Jobs by just looking at him at three different points in his life. And it's kind of, you know, you or me, you know so much more about Steve, you know, probably as much as anybody does about Steve Jobs.
I basically have a shrine in our house to Steve Jobs.
Yes, with candles every day. But I think you could pick so many other points in his life, right? And he picks these three points in his life and kind of follows that through. And I don't care if the movie I saw represented the true Steve Jobs or not. I suspect there's a lot of poetic license which has been used here. But by doing that, it kind of brings to light lots of other issues, and it brings up lots of things to talk about and discuss about, you know, if you're a genius, is it okay for you to be an asshole? You know, if you're a visionary, what is your responsibility to the world? What is your responsibility to your family? So it brings up all these issues, which is 100% Aaron Sorkin. But then what's amazing is that because Danny Boyle is directing it, he has to completely pace it up, and he has to make every scene seem like, you know, like it's a marathon. And so these, you know, he creates a lot of tension, kind of almost, you know, backroom drama. And so overall, it's a very nice package. It's not the movie I expected it to be at all, but what it is quite something.
What Yazdi said. I completely agree with what Yazdi said. You know, some people may criticize the way the movie's made because they're expecting the film of the book, which is the true biopic. But I think it's genius to make a movie as three different events with a common theme of parenthood as its foundation, because each shows a transition of the character. And we have three distinct acts, we have an arc, and we have incredible acting, and then what a great combination. I never thought I'd say Aaron Sorkin and Danny Boyle, who mm-hmm. seem completely yin-yang to each other, would make such a great pairing. Fantastic. I love this movie. I love Fassbender, so it's hard for me to be unbiased, but he is superb. I love this movie.
Joe?
This is going to be...
No, you know, as a piece of filmmaking, writing and direction, this has got it all. I think it's a very... it's a very well-made movie. It's a very, very good script in terms of it does make very judicious use of selected moments to try and paint a picture of a guy. And it's very much the picture of Steve Jobs that was painted by Isaacson's biography. So, yeah. I couldn't help my own personal disappointment with this simply because I think I wanted more of the standard biopic. I think this movie focused very much on the character flaws and not so much the visionary genius. I don't think it was necessarily a fair and balanced. Now, Steve Jobs is known for being mercurial and a very difficult person, but later in life he became this great leader and he created Apple. So as an Apple fanboy, and I completely am, I was just a little disappointed that we didn't get more of the visionary genius out of this particular movie, and that we didn't get more of the Silicon Valley story. And that's just me as a nerd wanting to see all the stuff that I know about the story. So, but as a piece of filmmaking, I really can't fault it. It's a very, very entertaining movie. It's a little too talky. I'll knock on it. And I have this inherent issue with Aaron Sorkin in that the characters sound like Aaron talking, speaking, they don't sound like the characters. I found it very hard to pick apart the individual character voices from who they were. What they said drove the plot, but it was a little too talky.
I'll give you that. It's a very talky movie. It's essentially 2 hours of people talking. But I think it's difficult to... Like, if somebody asked me to do a biopic of Steve Jobs, I wouldn't know where to start and I wouldn't know what to concentrate on. And I could totally do it like TV movie of the week, you know, this happened and he got divorced and whatever, his daughter. But I think that would be an inferior film. And I think to elevate it, it has to be a movie about ideas. And so I don't know the real Steve Jobs. I haven't read any books on him. It did come across to me based on, if this was the only information I got about Steve Jobs, that, you know, he was a... you know, arrogant, alpha, offensive, even unethical guy. And I agree, it kind of shows all those faults, you know, very vividly, but does not kind of counteract it with why he was at the top of the game when he was. And it almost seemed like he was more an orchestrator than actually somebody who was inventing or doing new things. And I don't know if that is unfair to his real life or if there was a truth to that, because it seemed like Wozniak and the other guys were the true inventors, and he was the guy who was kind of the driver, the maestro, you know, who was leading the orchestra. So there's lots of issues here. I don't disagree with what you said.
No, I don't disagree with what you said either, Joe, but I like the fact that despite the things you said, Yazdi, about him being arrogant and the orchestrator, there's something very human that's bestowed upon him by the great acting and the script and the direction by Kate Winslet's character. So I've read some of the books because I live with Joe and we have a shrine in our house. But I don't claim to know even a third of what Joe knows. But it was very interesting to me to watch a movie where it's not necessarily by the acting of the main protagonist, but by what's bestowed upon him by everyone else around him, that you get this very interesting picture of a main protagonist, whether that's Steve Jobs or not. Like you said, it makes for good movie watching. So I really like that the humanness came through, but it came from elsewhere.
He was a complex character, and
as all geniuses are,
and he was flawed in many ways. And I think the movie does do a good job of getting that point across. I think, again, the nerd in me wants the Silicon Valley origin story. You know, I want to see the A through Z of they started in the garage, they started building the... And there's a horrible movie starring Ashton Kutcher that came
called
out...
Called Jobs,
not so long ago, that had that story. And in some ways, I enjoyed that more because of the because of the nerd encyclopedia that it kind of presented for us. So, but again, I think that
so in fact, there's actually the Wikipedia version.
Well, there's a great TV movie from a few years ago, probably a decade ago now, called The Pirates of Silicon Valley with Noah Wiley playing Steve Jobs. That's a geek movie. That's the story that I wanted to see told again. So, and the Isaacson biography is a very dense book. You know, it's... like 1,000 pages. I mean, it's huge. It's a very comprehensive book, and there's so much in there that I feel like this movie being the official biography based script missed an opportunity to tell that full story. But what I again, as I said earlier, it gave us very much a sense of who this person was, but very much through the Isaacson viewpoint.
The movie funnily reminded me of a lot of was Birdman actually. In terms of its structure, because...
Yeah, I've seen that.
Have you seen that?
I've seen that comparison made, yeah.
Because it's really about a lot of craziness and chaos swirling around this one person who the camera is relentlessly following.
That's a good observation, which
is not necessarily a bad thing, but I think because Sorkin chooses to have his movie be about the half an hour before the launch of different products that Steve Jobs was responsible for at different time points... He's lifted by that concept, but he's also kind of weighted down by that concept because it necessarily confines him to only, you know, the backstage story. So it cannot stray. There are a few flashbacks,
yeah,
very few, but it's kind of, and the issue is Anders Wright, who writes for the San Diego Tribune, mentioned this after I came out of the movie, and he's absolutely right that what happens in each of those three events are a little bit repetitive. He interacts with almost the same people. They're kind of dealing with the same kind of conflicts. You know, Steve Wozniak is complaining about the same thing every time. So it kind of limits it, but it didn't bother me as much because
therein for me lies the genius of the movie, because it's interesting that it's similar things that happen, but that means in a sense that we see the progression. Right, we see, because they are slightly different. Yes, he's interacting with the same people, but that's what gives the movie continuity in a way. That's what gives us our three acts, and it gives us that arc. So I actually like the fact that it's like dipping your toe, seeing something, and it's so well done that it really is such a full picture for me.
But it's entirely untrue. None of what happened half an hour prior to those presentations happened that way, right? He's just using these build-ups to these... Jobs was notorious for rehearsal. And he comes out and he gives his very spontaneous presentation. They were rehearsed meticulously for weeks. And in the days leading up to the introduction of a new product, they would just do the whole keynote speech over and over again from the top. So this chaos that's ensuing before the product introductions happened perhaps before the introduction of the Mac, but none of the other... So I just, you know, for me, again, it was suspension of disbelief was failed for me simply because I know too much about how this company prepped for these product introductions. And there's no way family elements would come into play half an hour before he's about to launch a new product. There's just no way. He would not have that distraction there.
Okay. Anything more on this one, or should we wrap it up?
No, maybe I can make my final point and wrap it up as well.
Go ahead, Yazdi.
I mean, at the risk of giving a spoiler, but I think this movie was chugging along and I was so pleased with it, you know, as I was watching it. I think it's actually, this movie is a stealth movie about fathers and daughters. It's almost irrelevant that this is Steve Jobs. It could have, if they were worried about being sued out of the Apple Incorporation, they could have made it about somebody else. But I like how ultimately that's what grounds the whole story. And call me a softie or whatever, but when I came out of this movie, I wanted to be a better person. Because I really, not that I'm a genius or anything, but I kind of felt like sometimes you're so obsessed with your work and what needs to be done that you forget to be a good human being to those around you, and you know, to
especially your family, yeah,
and your friends. And this movie really wanted me to kind of be better to people I care about, and that's not a small thing. So I give it an 8 out of 10, and I also want to. We didn't talk about it, but you know, this is the reason why Kate Winslet is in the movies. I mean, she's so good. You're amazing. Michael Fassbender with no physical similarity. And he doesn't try to mimic him or speak like him or talk to him. He just has the spirit of the person in him. What great performances. They both absolutely deserve Oscar nominations. 8 out of 10. I'm so glad it's award season right now. All the good films are coming out.
I agree with you, Yesti. That was my opening comment for this movie, is I love that it's grounded in parenthood,
mm-hmm.
right? Because it could have been about so many of those other things, Joe, that you mentioned. But I think for the average moviegoer who doesn't know as much about Steve Jobs and doesn't necessarily want to know a lot about Steve Jobs, this is a really good movie. Great job. I think I see him a little differently now.
Score?
Oh, 8 out of 10. I agree with you.
And too talky, too incomplete, and too fake in terms of its portrayal of the actual man. It wasn't the movie that I wanted it to be, and that's my problem, not the movie's problem. On the flip side, everything you've said is absolutely true. Despite its talkiness, the dialogue is beautifully sharp, incredibly crafted. Danny Boyle has a way of injecting so much energy into any script that he receives that, again, this one here just bounded along, and performances fabulous all over the place. So objectively, this movie is an 8 out of 10 for me as well. On a personal, completely disappointed fanboy nerd, it's a 5.
And that's,
yeah. So, you know, I'm giving it 2 scores simply because I completely appreciated the filmmaking, but it just wasn't the movie that I wanted to see.
I guess it's hard to watch a film about someone who you admire or know a lot about, right? I mean, that kind of is a big burden for Danny Boyle and Aaron Sorkin for you.
Yeah, no, and they made the right choice directorially and artistically. It's just, you know, nerds want more detail. I want more detail. All right, mail@movieworlds.com. Let us know what you think. Twitter.com/MovieWallers, Facebook.com/MovieWallers as well. Let us know what you think of the podcast. Let us know what you think of our Netflix pick. We'd love to hear from you. If you are on Facebook and not already a fan of the page, please join us. We do interact with people there, so make sure you're part of that club. Until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. Hey, good night from me.
And me.
Me as well.